From sunny Minnesota, this is the Polaris Podcast, brought to you by the Polaris Help Center. I'm Joe Ziemer, and I am not an expert. Not an expert on picking out a trailer, and not an expert on loading an off-road vehicle onto one. So I decided to consult some experts on both of those topics. First, we're going to talk to Dan Mills, the Director of Sales for Polaris Trailers, about how to pick the right trailer. I first talked to Dan in March during the Polaris Spring Sales Meeting in Dallas. You'll hear that conversation, which was focused on snowmobile trailers, in an episode later this summer. Today, though, we're going to talk about the trailer options we have for ORVs. Then, we'll hear from Polaris service engineer Tim Nelson, who returns to the podcast to give us the do's and don'ts of loading, securing, and transporting our vehicles on a trailer. To the phone lines we go, and joining us first, from Maine, is Dan Mills. Dan, thanks a lot for taking some time to talk to us. For starters, why don't you tell us about yourself and Polaris Trailers and Alcom and how long you've been with the company?
Yeah, no problem. I'm Dan Mills. I'm the director of sales for Alcom, which is the manufacturer of the Polaris aluminum trailers lineup. We started up in the early part of 2006, really with a goal in mind of, you know, creating a broader, better lineup of aluminum frame trailers that not only was focused on the traditional premium price points, but also, you know, offering more broad selection of price points. The thought at the time was a lot of consumers were still kind of forced to buy a steel frame trailer just because of the price gap between the steel and the aluminum frame trailers was so wide. And so we really, you know, we saw an opportunity to, you know, not only build the premium products, but also close that gap between steel and aluminum frame trailers. I've been with the company as our director of sales since the very get-go, and we joined up with Polaris and came out with a lineup of aluminum frame trailers for Polaris dealers in June of 2010.
Well, a common question we'll get at the Polaris Help Center is, what trailer do I need for my vehicle? So let's help walk people through that choice. And I think at a high level, maybe the first major decision for an off-road vehicle trailer would be enclosed versus open. Just broadly speaking, what are the advantages to each type of trailer?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I think the main question is going to be, what is the vehicle you're going to be towing your machine with? Is it a, you know, a smaller SUV, or is, you know, with a limited payload capacity, or is it a, you know, a three-quarter or a truck? And I think a lot of consumers have found that how far they're towing is also a major factor. You know, so if you're going to be traveling hundreds of miles each year with your unit through various climates and weather, an enclosed trailer certainly is going to keep your machine cleaner and you know, safer in terms of you're not going to pick up road debris going down the road and that sort of stuff. The trend of late has definitely been a push towards a enclosed trailer versus an open trailer. And we've modified the trailer designs over the last few years. The common size was, say, a 7x14 cargo trailer with a 78-inch minimum opening. The trend now is we're offering a 7.5-wide model with an 81-inch opening, and that enables you with your side-by-side to open the doors, get out of secure the machine, and you have space to maneuver around to do that. On the open side, commonly consumers that have multiple machines, that still is the preference, just because of weight savings. You know, when you start carrying multiple side-by-sides, you know, you may need a trailer that's 22 to 24 feet long. The weight savings of that open trailer versus that larger enclosed platform is quite substantial. So you're still seeing customers when they have multiple machines and they're going from point A to point B, they're going with the lighter open trailer for that application.
When we're talking about that open trailer lineup, other than just the size, are there other variations you can look at and different features within the open trailer lineup?
Yeah, so we have a good, better, best price mix on trailers. So we have different widths and different lengths. So commonly, you know, two-seat versions, a 12-footer is the most common length, four seaters, 14 foot. Now, width wise, we offer them in a 6 foot wide up to an 83 inch wide. So depending on your machine, you know, that the width is important. And so with each one of those progressions, the price kind of goes, you know, up. Obviously the narrower, shorter models are kind of your baseline price points, and your wider your model and the longer is going to be your higher price point. And then there's other variations that we offer. We offer wood deck trailers, which would have pressure treated planking for the decking. And then we offer models with a full aluminum deck, the aluminum deck being the premium over the wood deck models. And then suspension wise, we do offer leaf spring models, or we offer torsion rod models. It is our belief that the torsion rod suspension is a superior value. Certainly allows for the customer to you know, kind of be flexible of how they load the trailer. Whereas a leaf spring is, you know, you really have to think about tongue weight and how the trailer is balanced. But there's pros and cons to each. Leaf springs certainly maintenance wise are much easier to look after. So in each one of those variations, there is those options availability depending on your budget.
Let's move to the enclosed trailer lineup then. Other than just the price and the size, what sort of variations are there within the lineup, and why would someone choose each option? What factors play into that decision?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it, you know, size, width, you know, just like the open trailers are there. You know, we do a lot of just base models with a ramp door and four tie down points. But we also have customers that they want some extra goodies inside of that enclosed trailer. You know, they want to insulate an interior. They want cabinet space for helmets, oil, miscellaneous gear. We've got customers that put ACs, heater systems, depending where they're located. And we even have customers that, you know, order them with sleeping quarters, bathrooms and so forth, you know, for a true, you know, home base when they're out riding. And so, you know, it really comes down to, you know, how are you using the trailer? Are you, you know, if you're going to be traveling substantial distances and you want some, you know, some functionality out of that trailer, you know, we offer all the way up to toy hauler type trailers, down to more or less the, you know, a trailer that has the proper sizing to comfortably tow a side-by-side.
Are there other factors besides just price and size people should be considering when they're choosing which trailer is right for them?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you're looking at the enclosed trailers, you know, we build aluminum trailers because we believe they perform better, they're lighter of weight, and they have higher resale value at the end of the day. And, you know, I think each one of those things is very important to somebody, you know, to think about when making a decision on a trailer. You know, our aluminum frame trailers have to be built better than steel frame equivalent trailers. Just because we're going to have, you know, our material, it costs more than steel. And so with that, you get less, you're going to get a longer warranty program, with the Polaris trailer. Several of our models have a lifetime structural warranty on them. And you're going to have less kind of wear and tear items because we're going to use superior components to build that trailer. You know, and that's a big thing a lot of people kind of overlook. It's, you don't want to miss a weekend because, you know, the front end value on the steel frame trailer was there. I think a lot of people have experienced that. And, you know, we know that our products stand up better. And, you know, the big proof is resale value. You know, I see, you know, on various websites, Craigslist, Kijiji, Facebook Marketplace, where, you know, I see consumers selling, you know, their trailer for virtually what they paid for it a lot of times. And these are trailers that are 7 or 8 years old. You just wouldn't see that value hold up with a steel frame trailer. And then, of course, weight. I mean, weight's huge, you know, and the typical aluminum frame trailer is 30% lighter than a steel framed equivalent trailer. And, you know, and you know, when you're looking at the world of aluminum trailers, you know, we, you know, at Polaris Trailers, I think Polaris obviously reached out to us because we have a great reputation for building a quality product. You know, we use a box tube aluminum. We have a tendency to honestly overbuild the trailers. And, you know, our belief is that, you know, we want our customers to love the product. We want it to be the, you know, an easy part of, you know, getting out with their machine. And, you know, so a lot of our thought is in making these trailers that are easy to load, easy to, you know, secure your machine, easy to unload, safe and reliable to tow. So you're not worried about that. And, you know, getting to your destination is more of a, you know, a treat with our trailer versus a trailer that's going to give you headaches. And so that you can really enjoy your time when you're out. And, you know, so I think, you know, I think there's a lot of things that we build into our product that, you know, inside of the aluminum side has, it's really helped our company grow. And we, you know, we are the largest manufacturer of aluminum frame trailers in the United States and Canada. And, you know, I think it is because we've had consumers that started out with, you know, one platform or one type of trailer. And as the machines have changed over the years, have, you know, we've been there to offer them the next size up or the next width or, you know, whatever it is, or the next level of customization, you know, the stuff that consumers kind of, as you, you know, you trailer and you get into this, you realize, oh, it would be nice to have a window in my man door and you know, all that sort of stuff. And, you know, really we're the company that can kind of do it from A to Z.
You mentioned that progression, and we talked about weights, and right off the top, you talked about towing capacity too. If someone's thinking, I don't want to have to get a new vehicle in addition to my trailer, let's say I don't have a truck, say I have a regular SUV, what sort of towing capacity would that translate to in terms of trailer size? What would I want to start out with?
Yeah, so, you know, depending on the machine and so forth, typically our say our 7.5 by 14, that's a very popular size for us, probably our most popular size in the US and Canada. And that trailer weighs about 1600 pounds. Couple into your machine, that's going to, you know, 2,500 pounds possibly, you know, so a lot of SUVs that have a 5,000 pound towing capacity are perfectly suitable for that. If you don't want to be that close to your, you know, your max tow capacity, you know, the open trailers, a 6 by 12, for example, you know, that trailer only weighs 550 pounds. And then you throw on the machine 25 or 3,000 pounds, you have this, you know, it's going to be safely inside of your towing capacity and it, very easy to handle. And, you know, so I think, you know, a lot of SUVs now, you know, 5,000 pounds is kind of that threshold before you get into some of the larger engines or pickup trucks and so forth. So it's certainly something to think about that, you know, if you do have that SUV and you're looking for an enclosed trailer with an aluminum frame trailer, you can accomplish that. And then, of course, you can be safely under that with our open trailers and have that extra towing capacity.
Is that something we should also reiterate to people, that before you come into your dealership, check out your towing capacity, check out the size, the weight of your vehicle, so they can help you choose the right trailer?
Yeah, for sure. You know, the tow capacity for your vehicle is going to be posted on your manufacturer's website. And, you know, it really is going to help the dealer show you the proper inventory for your needs and give you that option of, all right, are you know, what are you comfortable with? You know, and are you looking for an enclosed or open? And that way they can point you to the right unit that's really going to get the job done for you comfortably.
I guess I would also then recommend to look at the specs on the Polaris website for your vehicle. And if you put any sort of accessories, different tires on it, that's also going to change things too. So, right, Dan, that is something that can also play a big factor in which trailer is right for you.
Absolutely. Yep. Yep. You know, do you plan to have a cab added, you know, in very larger tires? Those things are all going to change the weight of that machine. And it's something that you should be aware of and thinking about before making that trailer purchase.
Well, Dan, before we let you go, why don't you tell us how people can learn more about Polaris Trailers and how they can follow you guys?
Yep. Polaris-trailers.com. You can also find us on Facebook, Polaris Trailers, and or visit your local Polaris dealer and tell them you heard about this and you're looking for a new trailer, a new aluminum frame trailer. And we really appreciate you taking the time to learn about our line of trailers.
Well, thank you so much for the time, Dan. We appreciate all the knowledge, and hopefully this helps everyone make the right choice for them.
Yep, thank you.
So now that we've figured out which trailer we should buy, let's learn the proper way to load it. For that, we turn to Tim Nelson, who you might remember from our March episode on removing our ORVs from storage. All right, well, we talked to Tim back in March about removing our ORV from storage. Tim, you're back now to tell us about trailering. Thanks for taking some time to talk to us.
Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it.
Let's get to trailering. You said this was a topic that you are very passionate about, so let's educate some people. How about it?
Yeah, that sounds good. You see a lot of myths and misconceptions, and this is certainly a topic I kind of enjoy talking about.
All right, let's start with when we're, other than just simply driving the thing onto the trailer, what are the important steps we need to take to make sure we are doing that properly and safely?
Yeah, so really first point here is that I'll make is these items are assuming that you have done your research, done your homework, and have set up your tow vehicle and your trailer properly. The tips, tricks, the items that we're going to go over in here really are going to solely depend on making sure those items are set up properly. So we'll assume that going forward. Those could really be just setting up your tow vehicle and your trailer weight really could be their own podcast episode.
Well, we'll assume that we've gotten the right trailer, we've got the right tow vehicle, so now we're ready to load up. What do we need to do?
Well, as always, safety first. Start by giving the vehicle a good walk around. Make sure your tires are at good pressure. A lot of the things that you'd be doing already during your pre-ride, you might as well get done before you even load it on the trailer. Assuming all that's done, toss on your helmet and then start walking around the trailer and start thinking about how you're going to arrange everything.
How do we position this vehicle correctly on that trailer?
So positioning the vehicle is just going to be about a little bit of a Jenga situation depending on how many vehicles you're loading. So walk around the trailer. Let's think about how you're actually going to arrange everything, especially if you're loading, again, more than one vehicle. You can run into some length and capacity issues, and we want to make sure that everything gets on the trailer. Everyone has something to ride when they get to the trail. So take a look at the length of the load with your weight distribution. That kind of goes back to the tow vehicle and trailer weight ratings. You know, really could be their own episode. But take a look at weight distribution, tongue weight, strap locations. We need to make sure that wherever we have a vehicle, there's sufficient locations on the trailer to actually then secure it to the trailer. As you're thinking about that, especially as we start getting towards, as we start looking at tongue weight and weight distribution, in most cases, that's how the vehicles are designed to be loaded, you know, and driving down the trail, that's where we're optimizing the airflow. Sometimes when if you load a vehicle backwards, for example, to take advantage of the rear engine for additional tongue weight, something like that, it's okay in some situations. You just have to make sure you think about a couple extra things. So pay special attention in that case. Again, if you're loading a unit backwards for any circumstance, pay special attention to the items that are going to catch the wind that wouldn't necessarily catch it going forwards. So any roofs, windshields, fenders, storage bags, accessory boxes, things like that, again, that you may not necessarily have to worry about when the unit is driving forward. These are things you need to think about when the unit's driven backwards. These items don't become giant parachutes and then actually end up damaging the vehicle. Something, especially like the new Razor Pro XP, the ROPS on that unit and thus the roof, is at a very aggressive rake. Backwards becomes an awful big parachute. So, in those cases, you probably best to remove the roof, remove the windshield, remove the back panel. When you're using items such as our lock and ride accessories, that's not a big deal. That's kind of why they're there. So these are the extra things that you need to think about, again, versus just loading the unit up on the trailer, strapping it down and driving away. Another orientation that you do see sometimes is vehicles being loaded sideways, typically because the trailer is overloaded. But there's a lot of reasons to not load vehicles sideways, for many of the same reasons that I just talked about, the unit not being designed to be actually in airflow that way, when things flying off, et cetera. But another one to think about is the width the unit adds to the trailer. Not a big deal on ATVs, but specifically on side-by-sides. In most states, legal trailer width is going to be about 8 feet, 6 inches, 102 inches. And all of our side-by-sides currently made are longer than that once you account the tires. So we obviously don't want to get into a situation where we're actually loading the trailer in a manner that's, not only improper, but potentially not compliant with transportation regulations.
All right. So you also mentioned wearing your helmet, wearing your safety gear while loading. This might seem obvious, but why is that?
Well, I think you said it best. It might seem obvious, and hopefully it is, but you are driving up an incline by default when you drive a vehicle onto a trailer. You're driving up an incline. A lot of these inclines are, the ramps are metal. You don't know how slippery they are, et cetera. And we don't need anyone falling off a trailer without a helmet.
What do you need to do to make sure you've got this thing properly secured?
So you drive up onto the trailer, you stop it, put the vehicle in park. All of our vehicles do have park, but if you put it in park, slow release the brake pedal. Just make sure the unit doesn't roll. Make sure it's indicating P for park on the gauge cluster, and make sure the vehicle actually engaged in park. If you're running an ATV, they'll have a parking brake on the left-hand brake handle. Make sure you engage that parking brake. That's important as well. And we'll hit on vehicles with our Dynamics active suspension system. We'll hit on that in a second because the process is a little bit different. But most of our vehicles, once you verify it's in park, once the vehicle's not rolling, you're going to take the key out, make sure there's nothing loose on the inside of the cab. If you have harnesses, especially on side-by-sides, if you have harnesses with loose straps, buckle up those harnesses so you don't have straps flying around on the inside of the inside of the cab. Buckle those up. Close your doors, make sure everything's latched securely. If you have any nets or, again, any storage items, storage bags, make sure those are nice and secure. There's going to be a lot of wind moving in there, and we don't need anyone losing anything.
Another thing we like to tell people too is to remove the key. Why do you want to remove the key?
Yeah, because if you don't remove the key, if you're not careful, that's going to be one long trailer trip to not be able to drive the vehicle when you get to your destination. I think that's happened to just about everybody, and certain people maybe more than once. But yeah, pull out the key, put it in your pocket, put it in a secure location. We don't need it flying out. Heck, we don't need someone driving that vehicle away from you. So that's something we do see once in a while, but make sure you've got that in a secure location.
So probably a good way to think about this is if something could fly off, make sure it's locked down.
Yep, that's exactly right. So your accessories, your storage compartments, your fuel cap, hood, seats, the bed on a Ranger or General, make sure all of that is nice and secure. Depending on the trailering trip, this could be a really, it could be quite a bumpy ride. So make sure we're going over those items and making sure everything's safe and secure.
Well, earlier you mentioned Dynamics. If you have a Razor and you have that Dynamics active suspension system, what is different about the process, or what are things that are really important to know if you're trailering a Razor with Dynamics?
Yeah, so the Dynamics active suspension is a great system. It really, really enhances the riding experience and really drives the performance of the vehicle. But a couple things to note when you're trailering, because it is an active suspension system, you do have to take a couple of special precautions when you're loading that unit on the trailer, mainly to make sure it's secure and it stays secure. So after you load that Dynamics Razor, leave the key on, put the unit in park, of course, make sure it doesn't roll, but then leave the key on and put the suspension in the comfort setting. So you'll find that either on your steering wheel hand controls or right in your ride command display. Put that system right in the comfort setting to make sure we have the proper shock compression settings in there for trailer in the unit. Get it out of the unit again with key on, and go ahead and strap the unit down, secure it, go back to the ride command screen and check to verify it's still in comfort mode. If it timed out of demonstration mode, or it went to firm or something like that, just reset it back into comfort mode, again, get out of the Razor, and then go retighten all those straps. And then once that's done, you've confirmed the vehicle has stayed in comfort mode, all your straps are tight, you've grabbed all the straps and said that's not going anywhere, get back in the Razor, power it off, and then take that key out and, again, put it in your pocket.
Well, let's talk about the straps we're going to use. What are the really important things we need to know about finding the proper tie-down strap for our off-road vehicle?
So size matters with these tie-down straps. as you're looking at some of these, the number that you're really going to be looking at is the working load limit, WLL. So working load limit is not brake strength. Sometimes when you get, when you buy these straps, there'll be this big number on the package bragging about, 10,000 pound brake strength, something like that. And you go, well, I've got a 1500 pound razor. I'm just fine there. That might be true, but what you really need to be actually looking at is that working load limit. The working load limit on a set of fabric straps is usually about 30% of the brake strength. And that working load limit is exactly where you, as the name implies, that's exactly the area that you need to be working in, not the 10,000 pound brake strength. Yeah, that's what's going to save the unit if something actually happens to the trailer. But that working limit is what's going to actually hold the vehicle secure to the trailer during normal operation. And then with that, looking again at the working load limit, so that limit of the combined straps must be greater than the weight of the cargo. So again, if you have, for example, a 1500 pound razor, that working load limit combined over all the straps that you're using to secure that razor to the trailer must be greater than 1500 pounds. These are probably going to be some pretty decent sized straps. These are not going to be the small straps that you're going to be using to tie down camping gear or something. These are going to be straps dedicated to strapping down heavy loads like, razors and ATVs.
This, again, might be another obvious question, but why should we not be using our winch as a supplement for a tie down?
Yeah, I see this once in a while, and it's sometimes a little nerve-wracking when you see it, especially because you can usually see the winch being used and there's usually not straps in the front of the unit instead. So the winch is, through no certain terms, it's not designed at all for holding a vehicle to a trailer. Winches are great at what they do, which is constant pull to get you out of, sticky, nasty situations. Winches are not designed for shock loading. So as you're rolling down the road with a vehicle on a trailer, when you go over a bump, that's not a gentle working load. That's a shock load when that vehicle shakes and the suspension moves. The winches and the winch cables are just simply not designed for that. So leave the winch retracted. You just don't even need to use it. Use your straps. Use straps in the front of the vehicle.
All right. So now we know a little bit about the working load limit. How many straps should we actually be using on our vehicle?
In this case, more is less. A lot of it comes down to some of your transportation laws that actually, depending on the state, may require a certain number of straps at a certain minimum working limit according to the size and weight and dimensions of the load as well as the trailer size. But beyond that, a decent rule of thumb, probably four straps for, a side-by-side, or two to three straps for an ATV. Making sure we're working with those working load limits on the straps.
Let's talk proper tie-down locations. This is a common question we get. Where is the proper place to place those tie-down straps on your vehicle?
Not to the body, not to suspension, not to anything that moves and is supposed to move. So your A-arm bolt pockets, your storage rack, handlebars, bumpers, even if it's a bumper that you bolted to the vehicle, it's not going to be designed for that kind of load. Really what you're trying to do here is, in simple terms, is to restrain the weight of the vehicle against movement. Those parts, A-arm bolt pockets, storage racks, handlebars, etc., they're just simply not designed for that. But we do design all of our vehicles with trailering in mind, then most of our vehicles will have those dedicated tie down points that you should be using. Some quick examples on our ATVs, you'll usually have a dedicated loop under the front bumper. That'll be right in front of the skid plate. That's exactly where you'd want to secure the front straps. And then in the rear of the ATV, typically either the hitch or there'll be tie down pockets somewhere back there. But usually the chain pockets next to the hitch are perfectly fine for that. On our side-by-side, so Razor, Ranger, General, you'll either have a loop or pockets in the frame on the front end. Again, depending on the unit, refer to your owner's manual for those locations. And then in the rear, you'll have either a hitch or another circular loop. specifically on Razer RS1 and the new Razer Pro XP, there are dedicated points on the frame to secure to. They do have those loops, but there are dedicated spots in the frame specifically for securing strap locations. And those items are highlighted in your owner's manual. They're not 100% obvious if you're, but once you know what you're looking for, they make a really handy and really convenient strap secure location.
All right. So once we have everything properly tied down, what sort of final inspection should I be doing of my vehicle before I get into the tow vehicle and take off my trip?
Yeah. So I'm going to mention the key thing again. Take a key out, put it in your pocket. I don't know if you can tell I've done that before. So go around to all the straps. Just because they're tight doesn't mean they're forever secure. So go around to all of them. Make sure all of all the loose strapping is secured. Tie it up, rubber band it up, do whatever. But we want to make sure we don't have any loose straps flying all over the place. Take a look at the hooks, especially when you're tying something down by yourself. It's really easy to lose visibility on the other end of a strap as you're tightening it. And it'll tighten, but you hit the first bump and now the hook comes out of the hook pocket or something like that. So go around all the hooks. Make sure they're all secure. They're not going to fall out. They're not going to slip out. The hook locations on the trailer, make sure everything's secure now that it's tight. Make sure nothing appears to be cracked, damaged, rusted, etc. We certainly don't want to run into something mid-trip. Of course, you're not allowed to walk away until you pull one of the straps and say, that's not going anywhere. I think that's law, actually. But beyond that, mid-trip, this is something you'll want to check back on. So, and get out, get gas, something like that. Go back to the trailer and take a look at everything again. It's very common, almost guaranteed you will have to add another click to a ratchet strap or something mid-trip. The fabric does stretch out a little bit. That's what it's supposed to do. But you're probably going to have to add another click or two at some point. That's okay. But the important thing is that you notice it and that it doesn't become an issue when you actually then need to rely on those straps.
Well, the recommended way to transport a vehicle is what we just described. Tim, let's say it's an emergency. I can't get to my trailer. I'm out on a trail someplace. My vehicle's disabled. It has to be towed. Last resort, how do I tow this thing properly and safely?
Yeah, it sometimes happens whether you plan it or not, or whether you like it or not. This sometimes does happen. Even something as simple as a flat tire or a blown tire. So being prepared for this situation is key. That preparation includes using a proper tow strap. So don't tow with a winch cable. Again, winches and winch cables are not, they're really good for their purpose. They're not great at, and they're not designed for these shock loads. If you've ever towed a vehicle, especially one where someone is in the second vehicle driving, using their brakes, et cetera, it's a little bit jerky. It's not necessarily the smoothest thing. Again, it's not great for winches and winch cables. So use a proper tow strap. Worth noting that proper tow strap is also not a recovery strap, but it is designed to take some of those shock loads when you're towing another vehicle. Put the disabled vehicle in neutral. And then the biggest thing there is go as short of a distance as possible and then keep as much distance between the vehicles as possible. Depending on if the vehicle being towed, for example, is powered on or not, the vehicle may also not have electronic power steering. Most of our units have power steering nowadays, but it is electronic and the key does have to be turned on. And it, even if you have the key turned on and the engine off, that power steering will cut itself off after 5 minutes to save battery power. It's, so you're not sitting there listening to the radio and the battery dies. But given that, if you're being towed and you have the key on, or if you have the key off, steering effort is going to be obviously drastically different once you lose that power steering or if you don't have power steering at all. So that helps with the keeping as much distance between the vehicles as possible, making sure this is done nice and safely. You're not rear-ending the Razor, Ranger, whatever in front of you that was nice enough to tow you out of that situation. Another item on that, don't go faster than 10 miles an hour, 16 kilometers per hour. In this situation, we're trying to keep things as safe as possible, and that's going to be the key there.
All right, Tim, really appreciate all that knowledge. I think now it's nice outside. It's sunny here in Minnesota. We're ready to get the vehicles out, put them on a trailer and maybe go riding. So we really appreciate your help in helping us do that correctly.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, I kind of enjoy the topic, and I've got a razor strapped to my trailer right now, ready to go riding. So can't wait.
All right, well, thanks so much, Tim. Enjoy the riding season.
Yeah, will do. Thanks. You too, Joe.
A big thanks to Dan and Tim, and an even bigger thanks to all of you for listening. If you like what you've heard, please consider leaving us a 5-star review. And don't forget to tell your friends to subscribe wherever they get their podcasts. If you're new to the podcast, browse our archives for older episodes. And make sure you've hit that subscribe button, because we'll have even more content coming your way very soon. Until then, this has been the Polaris Podcast.
Hi, you've reached Joe. Sorry I missed your call. Please leave me your name, your number, and a short message, and I'll get right back to you. Thanks, and have a great day.
Straight to voicemail. Okay, Joe, you need to tell them that the Polaris Help Center is their first stop for vehicle information, maintenance tips, and how-to videos. All they have to do is look for the Help button in the upper right-hand corner of any Polaris brand website. They also need to remember that all riders should always wear helmets, eye protection, and protective clothing and footwear. Read, understand, and follow your owner's manual. Never ride under the influence of drugs or alcohol, and always ride within the limits of your own abilities, and never engage in stunt or exhibition driving. Next time, answer your phone. Okay, bye.